Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 271. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
That's some pretty upbeat blues music.
Absolutely. Graham Thickens.
Yeah, I like that music. Good choice.
And Phil Wilson.
A little slide guitar, as a matter of fact. Very nice. How are you?
We're great. I'm great. I can't speak for Tim.
How's the weather in Stockton, California?
Well, what do you think the weather is in Stockton, California? It's same as always
hot,
in Stockton, California.
Hot and sunny, right?
Hot and sunny.
Yeah.
You got
it, sir.
There we go. You know, actually, from what I understand, this is cool for them. So it'll only get up to about 85 or 90. So.
Oh, really?
Wow.
That's cool.
Polar vortex, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, what I got a kick out of, you know, looking at the weather for next week in Minnesota, and what was the official term that I saw on one of the forecast websites? This is going to be unseasonably cold because the typhoon is making the jet stream wavier.
Oh, there you go. Well, I heard the term polar vortex, but that can't be, can it?
Yeah. It's a summer version.
Wavier. Yeah. It's wavier, man.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. Well, too bad.
Oh, well. We'll survive.
Yeah. Yeah.
We are hardy folk.
We'll just keep taking their water.
That's right.
It'll just skip California. It'll skip the West, go over the mountains, and then dump everything on us. So.
Yeah, we'll share with them. Come on.
Yep.
Well, I should probably say that I am at a Starbucks here. So I know that we set a very high bar as far as audio quality, and I'm right now Steve's worst nightmare because I'm coming from a Starbucks using their Wi-Fi. So my apologies. I will be muting when I'm not talking.
Yeah, no problem.
Some say, "Hey, Phil, why don't you mute while you talk?" Usually what people say.
That's right. Well, you know, if you were at a Caribou Coffee, you might not have that problem, but
you know, you're probably right, but I couldn't find one, so
yeah
they don't go that far, I don't think.
Whatever, doesn't matter. We should talk about technology, although I was going to bring up a headset that I saw, Phil, that has some of the best ambient noise reduction ever. And there is a guy that one of the demos, I'll see if I can find it and put it in the show notes. One of the demos is the guy's on a conference call and, you know, here's with the ambient noise on and here's with it off. And it was like, oh my God. I mean, you couldn't hear anything. Just stunning.
Wow.
So he said,
I was thinking about, emptying everything out of my computer bag and just putting it over my head, but it probably wouldn't feel so good.
Somebody would call the cops.
Yeah.
Hey, did you know here at Starbucks that Oprah has a chai tea latte?
Really?
Oh, no.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, there you go.
What does Oprah not have?
I don't know.
Exactly. Oh, God.
Exactly. Well, listen, I'm just out here in California, briefly, but it looks like Spark, Zach and his team are going to be out here a lot.
They're moving out.
If not permanently, right? Yeah. They're permanently
moving on
right?
out. Yeah.
That's right. Well,
that's too bad.
They give you $5 million, you have to move to San Francisco.
Yeah. Yeah. They claim that they didn't have to, but I have a feeling that maybe they already they wanted to and were willing to, and that always makes fundraising easier.
Yeah,
So they found a couple of Bay Area firms, including O'Reilly Alpha Ventures, to fund them. And I believe did you do a post on this, Steve?
Yeah, just a brief one.
Yeah, I saw you did. I believe they said five of them are going out there, but implying some will remain here.
Well, that was the implication, but we should ping Zach and ask him.
Yeah.
Catherine Grayson.
Yeah, I was over it.
To you and I, Graham, about the article that she did in the Business Journal, and that's in the update in the post.
Yeah, yeah, I didn't realize they were moving when I first saw the announcement that they'd gotten funding, but she had just done a story, and she pinged us and said, and they're moving to San Francisco, and I guess it kind of didn't surprise me. I mean, they're young, they're mostly single, I think. although a couple of them are close to getting married. I don't know. Maybe it's easier.
Oh, Zach's married.
Is he? Okay. Zach's married. Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Well, he wasn't when I originally met him, but he married recently. And then, what's her name? Wasn't she engaged, getting and ready to get married pretty soon? So I don't know if she's moving too. Do you know, Phil, or?
No, I don't. I was over at Coco Uptown, where they're based right now, and tried to chat with Zach, but they were busy, obviously, and I didn't have a chance to visit with them about, you know, what the plans were. But we'll catch up with them over the next week or so and find out what's going on. But it's going to be interesting.
I think he said they're going to ramp up to 20 or 25 people as soon as they can. And the implication in Kathy Grayson's article was that they still want to have a base here, or have some people will be here. That's what I got out of it anyway. So whether that will still be at Coco Uptown or not, who knows?
Well, what was interesting was the discussion of positioning them as a platform, that Spark is about a platform and really a Wi-Fi enabled platform versus SmartThings, for example, and a lot of others who are multi-protocol. You know, it's Wi-Fi, it's Zigbee, it's Z-Wave, it's all these protocols, so it's going to be interesting to see what direction they go in. You know, if they're going to be all about, you know, tools to enable, or if they're going to create a lot of finished product, or really what they're going to end up doing.
Well, he was quoted in one of the stories saying that that they aren't just about Wi-Fi. I thought, so there's a hint that, you know, something more is coming, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably Bluetooth low energy, I would
assume. There you go. Yeah, that would be obvious, I guess.
Yep.
Well, it's interesting because I ended up meeting with the chief revenue officer of HealthSense. They're a Mendota Heights-based company. Incredible management team. This guy and I worked together at Vignette and also at Lawson Software. John Schwartz is his name. And just had a, you know, just caught up and had a great conversation about lots of different stuff. And we talked a lot about the technology as well. And they're predominantly Wi-Fi enabled right now, but their connection is through mobile networks.
And so, what do they do? What's their product?
Their product is a essentially enablement for care organizations, whether it's somebody that provides in-home service or assisted living or nursing homes, things like that. And it's all about all kinds of different enablement, remote monitoring, and you know, there's a call system for nurses, and they can do vital signs, you know, sensors in the bed, and all kinds of stuff. And what's nice is you know, this is one of those obvious markets to look at, but it's one thing to have the technology. It's another thing to understand all the process stuff and all the stuff that you've got to be able to do and mitigate risk through insurance and everything else. But anyway, the point is that there's a lot going on, especially in this town, relative to the whole Internet of Things space.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it's sad to see Spark leaf. So yeah, if you get a chance, Phil, to chat with them, that'd be great. So
I will do that, sir. I will do that.
Well,
yeah. Okay. So what happened with Workface? You did a post on their latest thing too, huh?
Yeah. And it's, you know, this doesn't seem like a big deal, but they were predominantly Adobe Flash based, and they had built out all kinds of great technology within that, and there still wasn't a critical mass of HTML5-based browsers out there. And because of the onrush of mobile, it's really been driving a lot of the browser enhancements and so on. And so they deployed virtually all of their great technology inside of an HTML5 container, or using HTML5 as a way to deliver. And I've not seen it in action yet. Just saw a video. But it looks really cool.
Yeah, good for them. Yeah. They've been working on this probably for a long time, haven't they? I mean,
they really have. Yeah,
this would not have been an easy switchover, I wouldn't think.
Well, it's not because the HTML5 itself isn't ratified yet. Tim, I don't know if you know where the status is of HTML5 relative to ratifying the standard, but
yeah, I don't know offhand, but yeah, I know it's fairly imminent, though. It seems like most of the the world is moving this direction.
Right.
Yep.
Yep.
For sure. Yeah. So Workface is moving forward. I believe they've added more people. Leaf has kind of promoted himself to, I don't know what he calls himself, chief visionary officer now, but they have a new CEO that's based in Minneapolis in the warehouse district. They have some great new digs in the Colonial Warehouse building.
Yep, and I think Leaf is out in Seattle.
Seattle, yeah, and digging it, I guess. And they have contacts and customers and partners out that way. So yeah, I was over at their open house at the new facility at the Colonial Warehouse. I don't know when that was, maybe 6-8 weeks ago, and saw Leaf briefly. He comes to town still once in a while. So another example of a company that has kind of co-bases of operation,
right.
Out west and here, and nothing wrong with that. There have been many companies that have done that and that continue to do that, and it works well. You know, there are reasons why you have to be out there, and having feet on the ground out there is always a good thing.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Good for Workface.
Well, as long as they stay here, right?
Right. Yeah. I don't think they're talking about moving. And
well, that doesn't seem to be the popular thing anymore, I guess. But yeah, I hope they stay there.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. They've got their funding primarily here with Arthur Ventures. And of course Arthur Ventures has very good contacts out in Seattle as well. Meaning Microsoft specifically. But they're investing all over the place now, including more and more in Minneapolis. So that's always good to see. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, so this is maybe a bit of a change, but there's High Jump acquired by rival. Is it Acelos?
I believe that's how it's pronounced, but they're gonna use the High Jump name. Isn't that interesting? Well, probably because it's a hell of a lot easier to pronounce
than Acelos. Yes, Acelos is a very 2.0 sort of name. It's like put a lot of vowels together and let's call it. Then we're hey, welcome to the web. But I think High Jump is a much better name.
Yeah,
it's an older brand too.
Right, it is.
Yeah, it's got more visibility, more awareness, more brand equity, I guess. That company's been around. I mean, it went through the acquisition by 3M for about $80 million. What year would that have been? Like maybe 04-ish, 05-ish? Then 3M's management changed and they decided, why are we in the software business? And they promptly sell it off. Did the management buy it back or
I don't know. They sold it to a Boston VC firm.
Oh yeah, or a private equity firm or something.
For a lot less than they bought it for, apparently.
Right. They just unloaded it. You know?
Yeah.
And I guess all the time the headquarters remained in Bloomington and they're still there. I forget how many people they say are employed by High Jump. It's a pretty good number though.
Yeah.
80 or 100 people, maybe. I don't know. Could be more than that. But now I think, again, they're not moving. At least the Bloomington facility, I think it said would stay there. Acelos, I have no idea where they are, but they'll probably continue to have two sort of co-headquarters, locations.
Well, what I've been wondering about, because obviously we're seeing more and more acquisitions happening, it's going to be really interesting to watch what happens relative to roll-ups. How many companies are acquiring others in the space to make sure that they have a unified approach to whatever space they're going after. And it seems like it's moving in that direction pretty quickly.
Oh yeah, companies buying their competitors and rolling up in other ways, you know, like Jobs to Web got acquired by SuccessFactors, which then immediately got acquired by SAP. I mean, that was, what, a year and a half or more ago. But
yeah.
It seems like the M&A activity is just, you know, continuing and heating up even more so, you know. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see more and more of that, no doubt. And it will mean, sometimes it means jobs will go away from the Twin Cities, but other times, you know, it really doesn't. I mean, Dell and acquired Instratus, those guys are still all downtown. You know, they haven't had to move to Austin. They're still at 12th and Marquette and doing well. And, you know, I ran into one of their people at the Glue conference a month or two ago. And, yeah, they're still plugging away downtown there. I'm sure they travel to Austin once in a while. But
yeah,
Dell hasn't said, oh, you got to move down here. You know, that just doesn't work for families and people that are settled in, you know. So,
well, Phil, along those lines, what are you seeing in the mobile development space? Are there a lot of aqua hires going on? So people are buying others just for their team?
You know, that happens on a regular basis. Just, okay. I think in general in the technology space, you know, trying to get together, you know, consolidating and being a little bit bigger shop is the quickest way to kind of become or to acquire talent. You know, talent is that is the biggest challenge we face, especially in the mobile space. It is a very, 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 very. I mean, if you're a developer, you're in a seller's market. So, you know, yeah, I think you see that quite a bit.
Yeah. Yep. Well, things are changing, and they're changing pretty dramatically, as evidenced by Julio's article. Julio Heda Zapata wrote this article. Tim, did you put this in your butt? The FreeDOS operating system is 20?
Yeah, yet another example of obsessive development. I mean, it's kind of a crazy idea to try to do MS-DOS as an open source project and then
it's less a closed source project. Yeah.
Well, but have it come out in, you know, 2006, I think, is when it first shipped.
You know, and I didn't even know this was happening.
I could see it back in the 90s, maybe, but this is like a crazy obsession. And yeah, you can play DOS games on it and do other interesting things. And I'm sure that in some parts of the world, it's probably keeping very old computers running, you know, and doing something productive. So that's good. But there's a lot of programmers here in the Twin Cities, and Jim Hall is one of them that created FreeDOS.
In 94.
Well, his idea was to do it in 94, which makes sense, right? So having a open source version of DOS at that time frame, but it took him 12 years to complete the project.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, right? 2006, yeah.
So by the time it comes out in 2006, you know, I mean, the world has kind of passed it by, I would think. You know?
Yeah.
Well, but you know,
you got to give it to the guy, right? I mean, he's still hung in there, and it's still done.
Yeah.
Perseverance, baby.
That's right.
Well, and it's funny because I never knew that this was even going on. Did you guys?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I knew of it, but I just saw it when Julio did the 20-year, and I thought this would be something good to point out, you know?
Well, yeah. Absolutely. And you know what's interesting about this is that one of the things about Linux that's really great is being able to have really a low-level base case Linux distribution that you can load on a server and you have nothing else running. I mean, it's just stripped down. And there are some people who have done versions of OS X, Mac OS X, also to pull things out. And there's help things online about even how to take OS X server and strip out all the stuff you don't want so that you can have just this minimal base case distribution, so that obviously it uses less memory, you can run on slower processors and be really great and all of that. And I'm sure, you know, I read some of this stuff and it seems like that was one of the reasons for this, is that, you know, FreeDOS would run on low level equipment. But the kicker is chips have continued to get so much faster, as have, you know, graphics chips and everything else, and bandwidth has increased, and you need less and less of the hard drives, are, you know, storage is so cheap now and fast, and the buses are fast, USB 3 and Lightning and all that. So it kind of didn't really matter, right?
Well, in embedded systems, cash registers, ATMs, and that kind of thing.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Something like this would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, even today, maybe. Yep. Probably not, but.
Well, they got a cool logo.
That's right.
The Blinky. FreeDOS logo. What is that? It's sort of like a porpoise, or is it supposed to be a whale, or what is that?
It's a fish. Of some sort.
Yeah. Some sort of fishish.
It's kind of funky looking, so they got that going for them.
Which is nice.
How funny.
Got to have a good logo.
You know, guys, everybody knows that we always kind of work off a shared document as we go through. And Tim's title for the document today was Facebook Makes Me Sad.
Tim. Poor Tim is so sad.
Tim is sad.
I was in the sad group.
Which, of course, is referencing the big hubbub about Facebook's experiments and what they've been doing and not doing. So,
I just thought that my Facebook friends were depressed.
Sorry. That was some sad music there.
I gotta reach for the Prozac. Jeez.
Yeah.
And this was all back in 2012 when they did this, right? And they just decided to come clean with it? Or how did that work? Or did somebody out them on this? Or how did this news finally come out?
There was an academic journal published on it. And then it got picked up by the blogosphere. And of course, it went into this big thing. A lot of people, you know, were surprised that Facebook would do something like this. But to me, this is sort of like in their DNA. This is the kind of company that they are. So I wasn't surprised one bit.
Yeah. Well, I don't think they've necessarily, you know, you always think, is there some privacy that has been breached here? They're really not, because they're basically using the information that's available in the feed, right? So I suppose it would be better for them to notify people that they were using them in some sort of an experiment, but I don't suppose it's necessarily mandatory, right?
No, because in the terms of service, when you sign up for Facebook, they have language that allows this sort of thing to happen. And for them to be scientifically valid, you can't like tell your subjects what you're doing.
Well, I agree. Yeah. So I don't know. But again, you're right, Tim. It shouldn't be a surprise to anybody, because this is the kind of company Facebook is.
Yeah.
Well, I was surprised that it did get so much buzz, because, you know, if you look at why they do the like button or the like link, well, for the same reason, because you're telling Facebook things you're interested in over and over and over and over again, regardless of where you are, right?
And, well, they should have the hate button, too.
They should.
I don't know, that's a little over the top, but yeah.
but you know, this is really no different than walking into I hate to keep picking on Target, but we can say Best Buy as well, but Target specifically. When you walk into a Target store, they track movement. Now they're not zeroing in on you and doing facial recognition and all of that, but they're seeing traffic patterns. You know, where do people walk, how do they walk and all of that, when they're shopping?
No facial recognition that you know of, Steve.
If you connect, to their Wi-Fi, and you use their their app. What is it called? You know, they have an app for discounts.
Right.
It uses your Facebook Cartwheel. That's right.
Cartwheel. Yeah.
If you use that, then they know it's you. They know it's Steve Borsch walking around there.
Right. Right.
You know.
Right,
so hey, right. Steve's hanging over there by all the Apple products. What's the deal with that?
Well,
maybe
and then they
buy
also
a new iPad. Well, hey, Steve, look at this new Retina iPad Mini.
Hmm. Well, and they and curiously enough, did you know that the range is so tight now that they know when you're at the cash register, so they can actually tie your transaction to your movement.
Or as in Steve's case, the closer to the lingerie department.
That's right. Yep. That's right. And where do I try this on? So, no, but seriously, folks.
No, seriously, really.
Yeah, but you know, well, here's the other thing that is kind of cool. You know, in iOS 8, Apple is going to set it up so that the MAC address of your device, the MAC address, will rotate. So it won't be the same every time, because when you're walking around with your device, it's pinging Wi-Fi hotspots if you have location seeking turned on, and it's broadcasting your MAC address. And so what's happening now is no longer, because people are using VPNs and everything else, there's more and more movement toward using the MAC address of your computer or device as the primary way to track. And so that's changing now. There's ways to spoof it that are becoming easier and so on. And, cause that's what's happening with these apps. These apps are kind of hanging out in the background and being used for tracking, even if you don't know that they are.
Yep.
So, yeah. Well, what do we always say? Privacy's dead. Is that what we think?
Yeah. Well, Scott McNeely from Sun.
Yeah.
He said that in 92 or something.
Oh, it was, yeah, certainly by the mid 90s. Yeah.
Oh man.
Well, I also found it interesting. This story, this sort of last dish effort from Aereo. You know, the Supreme Court ruling went against them as far as their business model and being able to rebroadcast or retransmit or restream broadcast television stuff. But now they're going after the, well, okay, I guess we are a cable company.
Well, yeah. The court said they were, so they said, oh, okay, we
okay,
are
fine.
Fine.
Is there a business model there though?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You think is. I mean, do you think there is a business model there?
Yes.
So what is the business model if you use Aereo as opposed to Comcast or Charter or something like that?
Well, I don't think they're gonna be successful because the broadcasters will not will not give them a good deal so they can continue to do what they're doing. But what they may do is they may open up an avenue where there could be an over-the-top cable option where you pay, say, $30 a month, let's say, and you get your local stations via an antenna or some other means. And maybe they throw in HBO and Bravo and some of these other ones, you know? So there could be that, and that's what the cable TV industry and what the broadcasters don't want, because they start to lose control.
Well, you know, to me, that doesn't seem like there's not enough. I don't know. There's not enough killer content to drive that sort of a scenario. You know, is it really worth that just so you can stream your local television station?
No, so, but if they put traditional cable stuff on top of that too, say HBO, right?
But that's already out there though, Steve. Why would you want to go do that?
That's well, my name's not Steve, but
Bob.
It's not really out there to get HBO Go. You can work out a deal with your buddy, or you can go to some places on the internet and actually buy access if you want. But it's all this sharing the login, which at some point HBO is going to do away with. To get it legally over the top, you can't do it. You have to have a cable subscription to get HBO Go. If Aereo or somebody else is able to do this over the top, over the internet delivery of cable content, I think that will be an important milestone. And you know, Aereo is going for it as opposed to just folding their tent up.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just don't see it necessarily happening, Ralph. But I think that. Dwight,
okay, Dan.
I think Dwight, if you really want to go with that scenario, there's just not enough compelling content on broadcast TV to build yet another cable company around. And I think that again, HBO, Showtime, even Charter to some extent, their application is providing enough streaming options for the killer content, the inaccessible content through their subscription base already. Why would you want to go into that market? Are they saying, well, we've invested so much into these little friggin' antennas that we need to do something with them?
Well, they already have a customer base. They already have built a brand. And I think that because Barry Diller's behind this, he's sort of tweaking the broadcasters on his way out with what they're doing. I don't think they're going to get the deals that they need to be viable, but they're just trying to twist the knife as much as they can on you know, on the way out. So
I agree, and he's at the Allen and Company media conference in Sun Valley right now. You know, so I'm sure there's a lot of behind the scenes tweaking going on.
Well, have you guys heard about, I'm sure you have, about Popcorn Time?
No. Oh, yeah. What is it?
Well, it's a open source media player that people compare to Netflix, say it looks like Netflix, but it also has a BitTorrent capability. So you can stream copyrighted movies and so forth. And so, you know, there's been a big blow up about it, but here's the kicker. The kicker is that, and I'm going to see if I can find a link to it and put it in the show notes, but Popcorn Time is yet another way to get recorded programming, and people are using it, for example, to get British TV shows that they can't get. You know, as soon as something airs, even though PBS and you know, BBC and ITV and all those in Britain are compressing the time between the release in the UK and the release in the US, which is a good thing, there's so much demand to have it right now that people are using Popcorn Time to do the downloads and so forth. And so Germany went after people using Popcorn Time, saying it was illegal to use, and other countries have. Well, for that kind of use. But here's the reason I brought it up is that there's a new Tor, you know, the Onion Router program that hides who you are and your IP and all that stuff. Well, there's now something called Onion Share, which is a way to share files anonymously. And so there's talk about using Popcorn Time with Tor and Onion Share to be able to completely hide who you are, regardless of where you are in the world. And it's just like, oh man, really?
Hey, Steve.
What?
You've broken the rule of Onion Share. You don't talk about Onion Share. It's like Fight Club. Come on. Like, don't talk about it.
I'm sorry. We'll have to kill you now.
Damn it.
They're coming for you, Steve.
I got it.
I'm getting my bag of soap out right now.
For soap? What?
Oh, okay. You have to see the movie. Anyway.
Oh. So is this Popcorn Time? Is it a company? Is it an American company?
It was an open source project. It has been shut down, but it's still out there. You can still get it if you want. And it's a proof of concept to say there's so much content that's freely available on BitTorrent networks, obviously all illegal. But we're going to make a Netflix-like interface that makes it trivial for anybody, not just geeks, to get at this information. So you don't have to run... You don't have to go to the Pirate Bay or to one of these other trackers to get your stuff. It's just going to say, hey, you want to watch nonstop? Well, here it is. Click this button and you start watching it. And in the background, it's BitTorrenting the movie from some BitTorrent tracker somewhere.
Or it's getting at all this good British stuff that people want to get at.
Yeah, you want to see Downton Abbey? Here you go. Boom.
Yeah, that's where a lot of the good content. You talk about not enough good content to watch. That's basically how I feel about all TV, certainly broadcast TV, but I don't even want to watch, you know, as far as I'm concerned, there's nothing I want to watch on HBO. You know, I don't want any of that crap. But the British stuff, yeah, okay, that I'll watch, you know. Yeah. So if we could get more, if somebody could figure out how to get more of that good stuff to us without a lot of cost, that would be killer.
Well, there is a service called Acorn TV, which they have a Roku channel, and I think they've got some. I think they're on Apple TV too. Hmm. Anyway, but what they do is they do just that. It's a subscription. I think it's $10 or so a month, and you get back catalog of all these great British shows. You know, Doc Martin and a bunch.
Yeah,
of
others. Yeah, that's what my wife's really getting into now. So the BBC stuff.
And a bunch of ITV. So stuff like Cadfile, which is a great mystery show from the 70s and 80s. That's also up there.
Last Tango in Halifax. TV. We're watching right now.
What is it?
Last Tango in Halifax.
Oh, I haven't heard of that either.
Yeah, it's on the PBS app on the Apple TV.
I didn't know there was any Last Tango going on in my neighborhood.
Yeah. Well, so here's one way you can do it is you can buy private internet access for $40 a year, and you can choose the server in the UK and look up a miscellaneous London zip code or postal code as your sign in. And then you can watch all the British TV you want. Just stream it right from the server, and it comes through fast.
$40 a year, huh?
Yeah.
And who do you buy that through?
It's called Private Internet Access. It's a VPN service, and they have servers all over the world. And you get up to 5 devices with your account. So I've got my iPhone and my iPad and laptop and main machine all connected.
Cool. So you're really into this. You're really into this British stuff too.
Isn't it kind of amazing? You know, Steve goes after British programming as doggedly as a lot of people go after porn. This guy is you work your butt off to find this stuff. I got
it. Yeah, because porn's easy to get. You know that.
The porn's easy. Yeah, I mastered that a long time ago.
Well, and he's not even a subject of the Queen like I am, being an Aussie. You know, I should certainly be going after this stuff.
You know what's interesting, Graham, is my wife has talked to two of our correspondents just in the last week. One is in Melbourne and one is in Sydney.
Mm.
And she got off the calls, and one of them was like an hour and a half. She got off the calls and she goes, you know, it was like they were next door. That the connection was so good. And so I don't know how much of this is undersea cable or how much of this is done by satellite, but she was just blown away by how great it was.
Yeah, amazing. So, yeah, they're closer than they seem in that respect, but it's a long way to travel.
Man,
and you guys have been there a couple of times, right?
Yeah,
more than I have.
So,
but
well, you know what? Someday when we retire, we'll all fly to Sydney, and then we'll rent the car and drive to Perth because it's like 1,600 miles.
Yeah, just a quick jaunt.
Yeah.
And then we'll all go swimming with the sharks. No.
Yeah.
Just kidding. Oh, hey, you talk about great stuff to watch on Netflix or whatever. Storm Surfers. Oh, my God, is that it's a reality show in Big Surf with sharks. I mean,
oh, really?
If you guys are into watching some crazy big wave riding, Storm Surfers is really, really good.
Well, it's also on the net right now. There are more and more people that are using drones to do those great surfer films.
Yep.
You know, shoots. And so the drones are up above. Well, some people are doing it just with, you know, normal surfers who are, you know, in Santa Cruz or something. And,
right.
And they're screaming at people all the time because of all the sharks they see.
Yeah.
And so it's like there's video after video after video coming out. And you're thinking, those sharks have been there all the time.
Yeah. And you can really see them from overhead.
Exactly.
But when you're out there in the water, you have no idea. I mean, you know, when you're sitting out there dangling your feet off your board, you know, it's kind of freaky to think about, you know, but then a wave comes along and you get on it and you don't think about it anymore. But there's plenty of drone stuff going on, but the Storm Surfer has helicopters, you know what I mean? It's like a big time reality TV show, you know, with a crew of 30 or something. But the drone stuff, did you see Bezos has officially applied for rights to do the delivery drone, applied to the FAA.
No, really.
Yeah, that's just a publicity stunt.
I suppose.
Speaking of, you know, that was the viral video for the week was the drone flying through the fireworks display.
That was awesome, though.
That was very cool. That was
surprising, you know, that one didn't hit it though.
You know? I know. It's like, okay, well, I'm going to do this, but you're going to risk your drone to do it.
Your Phantom $1,200 drone, getting blown up. Yeah, now there's talk about drones being used to shoot video of college football practices, and there was a big hubbub about, well, what if somebody's spying on a rival team? And it's like one of the coaches said, hey, look, we would know they're up there. We could, and the operator would have to be pretty close by. We could go get the guy pretty fast. So it's like, no, we're not worried about people spying on our practices. But the drone thing is just really, really continuing to heat up. Lots of people have them. So a lot of local guys have them. You know, Bill Hyman has one. He's posting video.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and my client and friend Greg Osterdijk, who was the mayor of Carver, was blown away by a video that a guy did down on Highway 101, just south of Flying Cloud Drive. And he did his... he did his drone and flew over the flooded areas.
Huh.
And it was very, I mean, it was really cool to see it from that perspective because you really got a sense of how pervasive the flooding was.
Did the Carver City Hall ever get washed away, by the way?
No, but it's about 10 feet behind City Hall. There's big steel plates there and all kinds of gigantic rocks they poured down there to keep the thing from, yeah, because, I mean, if they hadn't have done that, it's a good chance that City Hall would have fallen into the creek.
Yeah, and is that the creek or is that the Minnesota River?
Well, it's the creek, but then when the river reached flood stage, it backs up the creek. And so then the creek got so high, they had to sandbag the bridges over the creek so that it didn't flood down the streets.
Good Lord.
And it's like, oh, man.
You know what? A lot of that water hasn't really receded all that much, isn't it? It's still pretty high in a lot of places.
It's still very, very high. It's down probably a foot and a half. So it's, you know, it's well below flood stage, but it's still really high. But it's that way around our house too. We got a couple of lakes by us and they're both still really full.
Do you have to go out in your hip waders ever or?
No. I just, you know, when I'm bodyboarding, it's, I don't do that. Not anymore anyway. Hey, did anybody actually read this Microsoft CEO, Satya Nadella's new letter to his employees?
Yeah, I did.
You read the whole thing?
Yeah, that's why I put it in the notes.
Yeah. Well, I got bored about halfway through and I quit reading it.
So. Well, the Cliff's Notes version is that he's all in on mobile and the cloud. That's basically where he's trying to take the company.
Okay.
Wow.
Well, that's
that's really a rogue sort of thing to do,
yeah,
isn't it?
I was going to say that's not exactly visionary. Getting out on the edge. Hello.
He's acknowledging that operating systems and to a certain extent, productivity software is not going to be the core of what Microsoft's going to do. They're going to certainly leverage both of those, especially the Office software, to capture more and more market share. But they are really doubling down on both the cloud, and they enable, you know, just every operating system out there, Android, iOS, and Windows. So I think that's going to be their biggest win, but also trying to get people to buy their mobile devices, the Surface and their phones, by integrating all of the Office stuff in it, which, you know, it's a reasonable strategy.
Yeah, well, they got to do something, but the title of the article, Why Apple and Google Haven't Won Yet, it's like, in his dreams, you know, I don't know. Do you ever see that company, that battleship, turning around and
Well, they did it once before. I mean, when Bill Gates... came out publicly and said, you know, we kind of missed the internet.
Yeah. And, we're all in.
I mean, talk about turning the ship on a dime. I mean, that thing was like a freighter that he was, you know, turning around in a lake. I mean, it was just like instantaneous in relative terms. So that was actually pretty cool.
Well, they say there's some, layoffs coming. I mean, Nutella, or however you pronounce his name, that nutty guy is going to do some major cutting and streamlining, taking the layers out, you know, which any
Graham, you just called him Nutella. What?
Nutella.
Nutella.
Yeah, that's what I call him.
He's chocolate and nutty.
He's a nutty guy.
It's like you're it's not like he's you know, he's done something wrong to you.
No.
Nadella. Yes. Satya Nadella. Yeah.
It still could be a spread.
Could be Nutella.
A chocolate spread. But anyway, yeah, I guess a lot of the troops are nervous about what's going to come down. They're going to do an earnings call on July 22nd, same day as Apple, as a matter of fact. And the expectation is layoffs, streamlining will be announced of some sort at that time.
Well, the key is, did at any point in time when he became CEO, did he say, I don't see any big changes in staffing ahead, you know? So that's usually the key, Zany. Everybody's going to get fired soon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The firings will continue until, what is it? Until what's that saying? The firings will continue until, you know.
No, the beatings will continue until morale improves.
Until morale improves.
Yes.
That's the one.
So, hey, listen, we're kind of deep into the show already, and I gotta tell you, I feel like we need some sort of I need some sort of security, perhaps a security tip of some kind.
Oh.
Oh, you mean there's a security tip of the week?
Steve's security tip of the week.
I knew I could count on Steve.
Oh, Phil, you are so funny. Hey, listen, there's a guy named Phil Zimmerman. I don't know if you guys know who he is, but Phil Zimmerman is the guy that created and invented Pretty Good Privacy back in the 90s, which was a way to encrypt files and emails and so on. And he posted it on a server. This is back in the early 90s. He posted it on a server, and someone else took it and posted it on a public server, and it ended up overseas. And so the government went after him for espionage and for violating the Espionage Act and all that stuff, you know, because this was considered munitions. It was that secure. Well, he was finally acquitted of any, or he wasn't indicted on charges. They finally let him off. Just they didn't pursue him anymore. But at any rate, so he's been going around and around for a while. And at one point, they were going to do an encrypted email program until they saw what happened with the guy in Texas that had the email system that Edward Snowden used. Doggone it, LavaBit.
Oh yeah, right.
And they saw what happened to LavaBit, and they went after LavaBit to get the encrypted keys, and they decided not to do this. Well, at any rate, they emerged. They had released this some time ago. They talked about that they were going to do this. They've released a black phone, and it's an Android-based phone that allows you to make private calls. That's pretty cool. And so you can have this, and it'll be totally secure. It's encrypted phones and so forth. Well, they just ended up releasing new software, and they're going to be competing with Skype and the telecom carriers and all of that to make very, very inexpensive calls. And so starting at $12.95 a month, you get 100 minutes, but you also get their software to do private encrypted chat, obviously private calling, private encrypted messages, and you can send files.
Well, don't you have to have these black phones on both ends for all this stuff to work?
You don't, because they have a $10 a month piece of software that allows you to do it it can just go. Two people have to have the $10 a month program, and then they can have access to silent phone, silent text, silent contacts. With software that runs on the desktop and so forth.
Well, all I can say is ISIS and Al-Qaeda must just be loving this.
Well, yeah, but, you know, I got to tell you that at the end of the day, when you hear about webcam photos that, you know, people are seeing and crowding around computers and all of that and the stuff that they're grabbing. I mean, you know, I don't want somebody opening up my mail, for example. And that's where we are now. So I want to be able to secure it. So, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, when guns are outlawed, only outlaws will have guns. Well, that's not true with encrypted software, but they're going to have them too. You know, they've already got them.
It's really not true with guns either. But anyway,
mm-hmm. Right.
But another fine security tip from our friend Steve Borsch. So
yes. Wow.
Thank you.
Very Sean. Nice. It's kind of expensive one though. I got to tell you, that's an expensive. That was a $10
that
a month.
That one's not a freebie.
It's not a freebie.
That's not your freebies.
No,
yeah.
No, I know.
Before we get to upcoming events, I forgot to mention that I was I had a chance to go over to the App Strategy Workshop.
Oh, I was going to ask you that. Yeah.
Yeah, it was over at that was held over at COCO in
Uptown,
and it was sponsored by the Application Developers Alliance. Now, I had never heard of these guys, so and I'm still not 100% sure what they provide other than a network of app developers. But it was a really nice event held there at their space at
in the back.
I think they call it the garage space
at Coco.
But a couple of really good panels: one gain and engage users panel, and then a monetizing with the user in mind panel. A lot of our friends were there, obviously. You know, Wade Beavers was there, and Jake Jornstad and Rob Weber was supposed to be there. He didn't make it, but that was a really well put together. And I didn't know Shivani, who was with NativeX, is now doing something else. She's with SPS Commerce. You know, yeah, Shivani.
And she was at Sport Engine in between doing mobile work over there. Yep.
Yep, that's right. She was.
Interesting. Yeah. So she's.
But that was a really good, interesting, an interesting piece.
She working for Jamie Thingelstein.
Jamie. Yep. Yeah, and she's real excited about that. Oh, yeah, man. I was sorry to miss that event. I was registered but couldn't make it at the last minute. But I saw it was covered pretty well on Twitter.
Oh, it was a good event. So, speaking of events, we have a lot of stuff coming up. And has anybody seen? Is the mini demo? Our tickets? Have they announced when tickets are going to go up for that?
Nope,
or
not yet?
Nope, not yet. Okay.
Free, gotta be free. They're one of them.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's right.
They got to be close to doing that though, because it's July 31st.
Right.
Won't be long.
Yeah.
And let's see, Mobile Twin Cities is coming up. I'm now joining in the organization of that event. And we've got, speaking of Rob Weber is going to be presenting on the monetization through user experience. So you might want to check that out. Plus, the fine folks at Google for Entrepreneurs providing food and beverage. So hope you can make that.
Nice.
And then this Bitcoin Bash looks at it. I noticed it's the stuff that is put on through this group is the tech.mn does a bridge.mn donation. You name your own price for the ticket. I'm wondering, can you pay for a ticket with Bitcoin?
No,
probably not.
Good question, but no, Eventbrite doesn't do Bitcoin yet.
Oh, darn.
Yeah, I was thinking about buying a couple server racks for the house so I can mine Bitcoins.
Go for it.
Michelle said, no, that's okay.
Yeah, because you can all huddle around it in the cold in the wintertime, too.
Right. So. I want a new sofa.
So that's coming up on August 4th, and then August 12th, the Minnesota Cup and Treehouse are holding a reception to announce the three finalists in the life science health IT division. I think there were, about maybe 10 semifinalists, and it'll be narrowed down to three finalists, and that will be announced that evening. Or I think it's like 4:30 to 6:30 at Treehouse. It's a free event. Register on Eventbrite, and that will be fun.
Yeah, and then I guess the other big deal is a cybersecurity summit where, you know, your tinfoil hat
crowd
correspondent Steve Borsch will be there.
Yes.
Yeah. That will be a good one. That'll be a biggie. in October.
Yep.
That's right. That's right. Well, I've learned that I'm a Tor user, and so I'm being targeted, I'm sure, by the NSA. So maybe somebody will be there.
Dude, summit. You were targeted by the NSA long time ago. So
and I had a guy who shall remain nameless because you guys all know him, and he's on Facebook and all that. But he said to me, "You ought to do a Freedom of Information Act request to see what the FBI and the NSA have on you, FBI specifically." I thought, hey, that could be actually kind of cool.
That'd be fun.
So,
and scary.
Why not?
But it would be worth a blog post, right. That's for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
That's for sure.
Exactly.
Ah, the things you do for a blog post.
Oh, the
all right. Well, there's
do.
Plenty. There's plenty of things going to be happening next week, and I'm pretty sure we're going to talk about them next week on
the Men of 8 Gang podcast.
Yes, we will.
All right.
Have a good one.
Thanks, guys.
Have a good weekend.
shit out of the